Thank you. Be seated.
The court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner Schultz versus Cato Company.
May it please the court, petitioner is represented by Mr. David Evans. He has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, I proudly represent again before this court Dr. Mike Schultz, who is here, as you all know, on the mandamus proceeding in 1991. As then, I had mentioned to you that there was a sheriff's sale on January 1 of 1991 of certain assets. I again update you that this judgment is not paid off, although there is a judgment lien created by the same abstract of judgment, part of which was proposed on certain real property that exists on some commercial property out there that has not been foreclosed. We are here today solely on an appeal from the granting of a turnover order, the request for which was solely limited to, quote, salary, close quote, a defined term. Although I will talk about garnishment and execution and charging order, I do so only in order to make sure that a view of all of the panoply of creditor remedies is kept as we discuss and argue and you all decide this issue on the turnover order. The amended application for turnover order is addressed only for salary. The sole and exclusive evidence presented was only salary. The testimony of Dr. Schultz in his deposition, which is found in the transcript at 39 through 188, was about his salary, that it was directly deposited, there was FICA, FUTA, SUTA, these things were withheld. The sole evidence that Cato Company used when we came up here the last time to try to hold Dr. Schultz in contempt was that he hadn't turned over, you guessed it, salary. We're only here talking about a turnover order of salary, albeit direct or indirect. The facts are quite simple, and in fact, they map out pretty specifically like or similar to the hypothetical posed in the Cawley v. Cawley argument. Dr. Schultz, in his June 6, 1990 deposition, testified that without any follow-up questions, so we don't know more, but that he had at that time or before that time asked his employer to make a direct deposit of his salary into a bank account. And when asked what account it was, he explained that it was the Schultz Limited's bank account. And I'd like to say that there's nothing disreputable about the name Schultz. That is the Polish name, and it's in his deposition. He explains that he called the Secretary of State and couldn't get Schultz spelled his way. So he used his grandfather's Polish spelling of Schultz if he could get the limited partnership name that way. From time to time, there were disbursements to Dr. Schultz, but also bills paying for the liens against assets were paid for out of Schultz Limited. The issue before this court is, as I see it, twofold. I will argue points of error 1 and 2 together, and they relate primarily to the newly enacted section 31.0025. I'll bring this up here. Let me first say that I tried to raise everything I could in the trial court, but 31.0025 did not exist at that time. It was enacted, it was written and enacted and defective after even the oral argument in the Court of Appeals. After I received the Court of Appeals opinion, I pulled out the statute book, saw that this was there, and the very first point of error was, with due respect to the busy Dallas Court of Appeals, please consider 31.0025 because this turnover order is a prospective order that Mike Schultz turnover wages. So we are here on that point. It does apply, as you held in Rayborn and Cawley v. Cawley, because the same, it's precisely the same language that you opined there said that gave it immediate effect. So the issue is, does this order direct Dr. Schultz to turn over wages for personal service at any time before he's paid his wages? Let me draw you to the Court of Appeals opinion in that regard, and I will quote here. It says, Schultz had sufficient control over his wages to direct them to be transferred to Schultz Limited. Consequently, once Schultz, a judgment debtor, directed that his wages be transferred to Schultz Limited, they became, past tense, quote, income, close quote, and lost their status as current wages. There's just no dispute that the appellate court, held that the directive that occurred asking that they be deposited caused those wages to lose their character as current wages. That's how I understand that sentence, and I think it's susceptible of no other interpretation. That is very definitely, however, a order entered before he receives his wages. The garnishment cases that the court cited in reliance for some analogous authority, I would contend two things about them, Your Honors. First is they're inapplicable. We're not talking about garnishment. We're talking about turnover. Nothing that Dr. Schultz is asking you all to do here today regarding turnover order is going to have any effect on garnishment, the statutory, constitutional exemptions. A writ of execution is solely relates to turnover order. That is all that we are here today regarding. So I think that the appellate opinion clearly orders the turnover of personal wages before they're received, for which reason it should be vacated and judgment should be rendered that the application, solely limited to, quote, salary, should be in all things, judgment rendered in favor of Schultz that it take nothing for Cato.
So you're saying that Dr. Schultz can exercise control over the wages and direct that they be deposited in a limited partnership and still retain their character as wages?
I am saying for the purposes of the turnover statute, yes, and I'll argue a little more fully as we come up, but let me first deal with that control because that was in their opinion. Does it matter whether there's control? There's very little evidence of that in the record. And secondly, I was in court last week and heard a lawyer explaining to the judge why his truck driver client didn't have paychecks as evidence of his pay. And he explained that the employer for the truck driver got each truck driver to give them the account number in which to deposit the paychecks. And they were deposited by either wire transfer or some mechanism that wasn't explained as I heard it. When I was at Haynes and Boone, we call it forced savings, where you could designate X percentage of your paycheck. They would deposit it to an account that you designate. When I did that, when the truck driver did that, how and why is it any different than when Dr. Schultz did it?
Because the account belongs to the partnership and not to Dr. Schultz.
Yes, Your Honor. But on September 20, 1990, they also got a charging order against that partnership.
But when you deposit the funds to someone else's account, they belong to that person, don't they?
Well, the statutes that I cite in the footnote show that the proceeds of language does relate to various court procedures, and the most analogous one of all those seems to me to be the family law, where the proceeds of a house are deposited into the registry of the court, which of course I don't exactly know whether the account name is in the district clerk's name, or I doubt it's in the court's name, but it certainly isn't in the two marital partners that are
irrespective of how the registry of the court is conducted.
Yes.
When you pay over money into this partnership account, doesn't it belong to the partnership?
It would belong to the partnership.
And then how, after the partnership pays it out, is it salary, anybody's salary?
It is the proceeds of or disbursement of salary, Your Honor, is my contention, because it is the sole, the evidence before this court is that it is the sole source of the funding of the Schultz Bank account. And when it came out from time to time, and remember the charging order was after his deposition, which was the sole evidence at the turnover hearing, which is at the same time, I've got the year wrong, it should be 1990. When it came out after that, that is before the charging order, it would come out as a distribution from his, from the limited. The capital account would have gone up when it went in, and the capital account went down.
So how is a distribution from a partnership capital account salary?
It is the proceeds of or disbursement of salary, because that is the sole source of it.
So if money is once paid as salary, no matter who it's paid to after that, no matter who has it after that, it's always salary.
It is the, if you can trace it accurately enough, it would be the proceeds of or disbursement of, and the turnover order would not be able to reach it. That says nothing about other creditor remedies, like charging order, writ of execution, or any of these other things. This gets into my third point of error, and I'd like to just embark right into it, because the history of the legislative history of this statute that Cato has attached as attachment 2 to its brief, the testimony of Mr. Overstreet, who drafted 31.002F, goes in this fashion. He's being asked questions by Senator Bivens, and he says, this is Mr. Overstreet, if I give you a paycheck and you deposit it in the bank, The creditor can still garnish the bank account. This doesn't stop that. All this does is stop a turnover order where a judge says, if you don't turn over the proceeds, I'm going to lock you up. That's page 10, lines 22 through 26. He also testified on page 16, line 19, through page 17, line 9, when Senator Anderson asked questions to wrap it up. This is the senator. Let me see if I understand this finally. This only affects the turnover statute. Mr. Overstreet, yes. Senator, therefore, if a wage earner got his check and cashed it, couldn't be ordered to turn over the cash. Mr. Overstreet, right. Senator, however, if he deposited in his bank account and the bank was garnished, he loses the money. Mr. Overstreet, that's right. Senator, he couldn't argue that, oh, excuse me, those are the proceeds of my paycheck and therefore not subject, Mr. Overstreet, no, because you'll notice that the only thing this amends is the power of the turnover statute. It does not expand substantive exemptions. Mr. Chairman, all right, keeps the proceeds in cash, in a shoebox, you can't get them? Mr. Overstreet, you can with an execution. I urge you, as you listen to the argument of Cadle Company on this point, to keep in mind we aren't talking about garnishment.
Why isn't this simply a rather transparent scam by a man that makes $23,000 a month to avoid paying a $43,000 judgment?
Your Honor, his salary is exempt, as we all know, and there's about $40,000 to $70,000 worth of property subject to that lien in Brownwood that they could foreclose if they want to. And the issue is, does he have to be ordered by a court to turn over the salary? And I say that the legislature has enacted not just the two statutes I pointed out, which are 3102F, the proceeds of or disbursement of, and also 0025 at any time before a judgment, both of which this reconstructed appellate opinion that reconstructs a turnover order, it violates both of those, but it violates two more statutes. And those are, and I get to this and I will explain in just a second, but the limited partnership statute specifically says that the creditor can ask the court to charge the partnership interest of the partner or other owner with payment of the unsatisfied amount of the judgment. The remedies provided by that subsection are exclusive of others that may exist. Why is that important for this court's determination? Because on 31002, it says right here, the property that can be reached by a turnover order are property that cannot readily be attached or levied on by ordinary legal process. Well, they've got legal process, the charging order. Not only hypothetically, but they actually have that charging order in place to on this limited partnership. And so, Your Honor, they have the ability to, and they've garnished the limited partnership bank accounts also. So all of these things have been done. We are not talking about limiting those remedies or curtailing them. We are only talking about the scope of turnover order, which was created by legislative fiat, and it can be amended and curtailed by legislative fiat.
I understand you say that this proceeds of current wages applies only to turnover and not to other means of collections, but I'm curious what you contend, when you would contend that current, that something ceases to be the proceeds of current wages, how many various stages it could go through before it would ultimately lose its character as proceeds. Could you buy stock in a brokerage account? Could you buy furniture, car? Would it still retain its character as proceeds of wages then?
For an application for a turnover order, I would contend if you could trace it, the answer would be yes, because if you notice, the legislature did the same thing in 0025 down here. It says the section applies to wages in any form, paycheck, cash, or property. And up here, this is broad and not limited, proceeds of or disbursement of property exempt under the statute.
So it's really an exercise in tracing?
Well,
I
think the practical effect is it would put a debtor to that effort, but the creditor would probably be better served to use a different remedy to go get the particular asset. The Walmart stock example that was used in Colleague to Colleague, the wages that are used to specifically deposit in a bank account, and then that's used to buy a limited partnership interest, which is sold and Walmart stock is bought. Well, Walmart stock can be part of a writ of execution. The limited partnership could be charged. The bank account could be garnished. I mean, there's something at every stage. That's why It's kind of like I get caught up in a blizzard of all these things, often bad, that are said about Dr. Schultz. The answer is, we're talking about a request for a turnover that asked for only, quote, salary, close quote.
Well, if those other means of collecting judgments and were satisfactory in the legislature's estimation, why would they create an additional means of collection called turnover?
For property that cannot be readily attached to levy by ordinary legal process. But the limited partnerships accounts have been both garnished and his interest in it has been charged. I just think that that's per se, you know. Readily, they did it. Legal process, they get it.
But they didn't get their money?
Not from that source, because the checks bounced and the lenders to those assets foreclosed their liens on. The bank, the FDIC had taken over the bank, and Arabians were sold to pay off the loans. But I mean that my doctor is in debt up to his ears is, I mean, you know, they're always going to come later than the secured lender by which he bought it, the particular asset.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, respondent is represented by Mr. Michael Jones.
May it please the court, counsel. Justice Heck, you're exactly right. This is a scam. The facts in this case show that this is a complicated scheme by a very wealthy doctor who has adamantly refused to pay a valid and subsisting $43,000 judgment. This man makes $23,000 a month, and he simply decided he's not going to pay this judgment. He's going to do whatever it takes to keep my client from collecting on the judgment. Cadle made a demand that he pay the judgment. Dr. Schultz immediately began transferring assets. He formed this limited partnership that we talked about, that I'd like to talk about in depth. He set up family trusts. He transferred all his assets, all purportedly, as the Court of Appeals recognized, for asset and what he claimed were purported estate and tax planning reasons. Dr. Schultz is not a poor truck driver who's making $750 every 2 weeks who's trying to afford to support his family. He's a wealthy doctor. He owned 50% of the women's clinic that his alleged salary came from. Income salary, that was the problem, and those were the issues that the trial court addressed.
But you understand, of course, that any law we announce is going to apply to truck drivers just as much as to wealthy doctors.
Yes, sir. And there's a big difference in this case. And I think the facts of this case are important. The arguments that are being made by Dr. Schultz are not the arguments that the legislature considered when it passed these laws. The legislature, and I'll get into that in just a second, but what the legislature was trying to do was trying to protect the truck driver, trying to let that truck driver get his paycheck, cash that paycheck and pay his bills. They weren't trying to protect a clever doctor who transfers a bunch of money into a limited partnership account and argues that's my salary. They're not trying to protect some guy like this who's got a lot of money to play these games. They're trying to help the individual get his check. And we talked about proceeds. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but on the proceeds issue, I think the legislative history that we've attached to our brief makes it clear. Mr. Overstreet said they're trying to help the individual to get his paycheck, to be able to cash it, and to pay his bills. The problem that the legislature was trying to deal with were courts that were preventing the judgment debtor from getting his paycheck and paying his bills. Those courts were saying when the paycheck hits your hand, it's no longer current wages. Therefore, I'm going to order you, Mr. Judgment Debtor, you either turn over you cash your paycheck and you give the money to a receiver, or I'm going to hold you in contempt. They were preventing that man from taking his money and paying his bills as the legislature intended to, and were basically circumventing the constitutional prohibition against garnishment of wages. This proceeds issue stops there, though. It's clear from the legislative history that Mr. Overstreet considered the cash, either the check itself or the cash, to be the proceeds. The idea that a man can for 10 years collect his paycheck and accumulate an enormous wealth but say that's all proceeds from my wages and therefore that's exempt unless you somehow figure out how you're going to get at it is ridiculous. The turnover statute was specifically drafted to get at recalcitrant judgment debtors like Dr. Schultz.
So what bright line rule would you draw in determining what is proceeds and what is not proceeds?
Proceeds is the paycheck.
For the truck driver and the rich doctor both.
The proceeds are the paycheck or the cash that he gets. Texas law is still clear that once, if a man takes his paycheck and puts it in a bank account, it's still subject to garnishment. And they clearly recognized that when they made the amendments to the turnover statute. They said, we recognize that if he takes his paycheck and deposits it in the bank, it's no longer current wages, it can be garnished. The way he gets around that is he takes his paycheck and he goes to the bank and he cashes it and he pays his bills, he buys his groceries, he does whatever he needs to. Beyond that, they weren't offering any protection. I think when you look at those two together, what the legislature was trying to do is to prevent a court from entering an order before the wages were paid, saying once you get your wages, you've got to turn them over. You don't have the alternative of paying your bills or supporting your family. You've got to pay it over or we're going to hold you in contempt. That's what they were trying to remedy. In this case, what Dr. Schultz did is say he formed a limited partnership. He told the women's clinic that he owned 50% of, put $11,500 into the limited partnership bank account every 2 weeks. That money went in there. Now, counsel for Dr. Schultz keeps arguing salary. The trial court looked at it and focused on the income that was in that limited partnership and said, you've got a capital account in that limited partnership. That's what I'm ordering you to get, the income. The order doesn't say wages. The order specifically says the income he constructively possesses or actually possesses or receives, and was pretty broad. With a judgment debtor like Dr. Schultz, you've got to be pretty broad because he's got a lot of schemes here about how he's not going to pay this judgment. But the trial court clearly focused on the money that was going into that partnership and said that's not exempt. As Justice Heck said, that's his capital account in a limited partnership. Those aren't proceeds of current wages. The Court of Appeals looked at the same evidence and said that's income. That's what the trial court's doing is ordering him to pay over that income. These are not wages.
Is there any dispute that 310025 controls even though it apparently became effective after the Court of Appeals opinion?
No, sir. The only dispute is what are proceeds? And it's our position proceeds end when he cashes his check and pays it. Proceeds aren't $100,000 worth of IBM stock that he buys with his salary over 10 years.
Well, that can't be the test of when he cashes his check under your argument, can it? Because if a working person cashes their check and is on their way to the grocery store to buy groceries to feed their family, you'd say those are still proceeds.
Yes, sir, the cash. When he goes down and gets the cash are the proceeds.
So at what point do they lose their character as proceeds?
I think once they either put it in a limited partnership, once they go buy something that's non-exempt, once it gets into non-exempt property, it's no longer proceeds. One of the issues, though, that I know in the statute it talks about current wages, if I get paid every 2 weeks, the next time I get paid, whatever I've got left from my salary is no longer current. I think there's an issue there as to how far the proceeds go after the wages are no longer current. But I think clearly from the legislative history, the intent was the man has the right to take his paycheck, to go cash it, to take that cash and spend it on whatever he wants to, and he can't have that taken away from him.
What if he buys something else that's exempt? Then it remains exempt?
Yes, sir. If it's non-exempt, though, there is no tracing. Nowhere in the legislative history did the legislature, when they used the word proceeds, envision that there would be this long tracing that for year after year, as long as a guy can say, this is what I bought for my wages 10 years ago and it's still exempt, therefore you've got to go get a writ of execution. But by the way, it's in a safe deposit box in the bank, and of course the constable's not going to go in there and get that $100,000 worth of stock that I've got hidden in there, so really you're not going to get it. It's interesting that Dr. Schultz wants to say that we've got a charging order against the partnership. That was 2 years ago, and obviously we hadn't gotten a penny that way. On the garnishment of the bank accounts, what Dr. Schultz had done is the bank accounts say F. Michael Schultz Sulk Limited. So they have about three names in them. So when they were garnished, the bank froze all the accounts because the bank had no idea whose account it was because of the way Dr. Schultz had it titled. So as far as, obviously, we could not garnish the limited partnership's bank accounts. We don't have a judgment against the limited partnership. All we can do is go against Dr. Schultz. Dr. Schultz and his attorneys thought they came up with a pretty good plan for trying to keep us from collecting on this judgment, but obviously as is recognized on one of these, they realized after they did it, he's waived any exemption he might have. Now Dr. Schultz gets his check directly, and he probably goes down to the bank and cashes it and uses that cash. But the scheme that he set up, clearly he's waived any exemption he had by putting that money in the limited partnership. That is what the court ordered be turned over. I'd like to point out, though, one other point on this tracing issue. I don't believe Dr. Schultz raised in his brief this idea that really tracing and proceeds only applies to the turnover statute. I once again reiterate that the turnover statute was exactly designed to help judgment creditors collect from recalcitrant judgment debtors such as Dr. Schultz. To suggest that the legislature put this proceeds idea so that he could argue, well, Judge, you can't order me to turn it over, but by the way, the constable can go get it right now, you know, if he can find it. The legislature was trying to make it easier for judgment creditors, not harder, with the idea of proceeds and not having a judge. So I can't order you to turn it over, but I guess I can tell the constable to go get it if he can find it. Which, you know, in this case, they're never going to find anything because Dr. Schultz is going to have it hidden somewhere, going to have it in somebody else's name. For these reasons, we believe that the turnover order was appropriate. The Court of Appeals and the trial court determined that the income that was in the limited partnership was not exempt. There's no other way to get at that money once Dr. Schultz puts it in there other than the turnover order. The charging order did absolutely nothing. No money's been paid on the judgment. Obviously, nothing's going to be paid out of that partnership. For these reasons, we suggest that the order of the trial court was appropriate. The Court of Appeals obviously recognized that the order was appropriate. We therefore ask that this judgment, that this court affirm the trial court's judgment.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, I'd like to address just a couple issues on rebuttal. I would enjoy the opportunity to try, if all nine of you were to sit for a trial, these allegations of the fraudulent transfers. They've never been proven, they're always just said. They're always just whipped me over the head with it, but they don't prove it. And the one place we did it in front of Judge Richter, they lost, and he entered an order that said no evidence of any fraudulent transfers. This is a family farm, Dr. Schultz hands. They live on it with his wife and his two children. And the family farm is the manner in which the Schultz Limited is how they run the family farm. We produce all the checking accounts. We produce tons and tons of documents. Nothing is hidden. Nothing. Nothing. Nothing is being hidden. It's all out in the open. You know, if they could, they'd be trying to overturn the homestead law, too. But that's up to them. We are here to discuss turnover order. They are saying that the legislature did want to help individuals. It did. Dr. Schultz is an individual. He's like everybody else. He gets a wage. The legislature saw that courts were getting around the garnishment prohibition by using turnover, so it entered subsection F and later didn't think that was enough, so it did 31.0025. You asked about the bright line rule. I don't know anything other than the concept of tracing that comes from marital property, because it is of the same nature where you are left to try to look at the character of an asset. For a non-marital property lawyer like myself, it's a tough thing to think of the concept of an asset as community or soul separate and all this other stuff. But still, that, I think, is what the legislature has told debtors to embark on as their defense. And although I'm sure there's a struggle with it in the marital property area, it's probably going to be the same struggle with it here. I don't think that proceeds of or disbursement of is limited to cash because it doesn't say so. The Terrell Smith affidavit is an affidavit of his state of mind and is inappropriate for legislative history. And there's no other place in the legislative history where the limit that they seek, they can show us that it was there. So in summary, Dr. Schultz is not asking this court to in any way cut back or curtail. the constitutional protection for various properties, or the remedy, or these other remedies, garnishment, writ of execution, or these others. We are here solely on a turnover, solely from an application that asked for only one asset, quote, salary, close quote. And the appellate court saw fit that at the time when he directed his salary to be directly deposited, from there on out it could be ordered to be turned over. And I think that offends 310025. And the part of it that starts discussing Schultz Limited and any proceeds there, that's already been charged, and also those violate the four locations of the statutes that I've highlighted here before us. So with due respect, I would request that the Court of Appeals opinion and judgment be reversed and rendered in favor of Dr. Schultz, and they can always go into Judge Richter again and do another turnover order. Thank you, Your Honors.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in these causes. Both causes will be submitted on briefs and oral arguments. The marshal will now please adjourn the court.
Please rise. Oyez, 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 the Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned, subject to call.